Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. As always, it's good to be here with you at OC Talk Radio, and I want to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. Now, today is an extra special day as we have with us in studio Leah Kagasa, who is Miss Uganda 2016. I'm so excited to interview Leah, as she has lived a most interesting life, from experienced life in a poverty-stricken rural Uganda to life in a small city, on to an excellent public education, university, and then was surprised to run for and win the Miss Uganda Beauty Pageant in 2016. Currently, Leah is a fashion model, a representative of Uganda, and most importantly, a very active philanthropist. As a matter of fact, I met Leah when she became interested in representing Wells of Life and has since become a most impactful ambassador for our charity of drilling clean water wells in rural Uganda. So, Leah, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm glad to be here.
It's so great to have you here. So tell me, how are you enjoying your time here in Southern California?
I like it. I thought I'd find hotter weather, warmer weather, Southern Californian weather. But it's a bit chilly, though, I guess because it's winter.
So. Yeah, it's as winter as we can get. We're reaching our cold spell now. You know, it gets all the way down to 50, which is, I don't know, Celsius. You know, that's probably, what, 10 or 11?
Yeah, about 10 or 11.
Yeah, yeah. Now, this is not your first trip to Los Angeles, Southern California. You've been here two times in the past?
Yeah, two times. This is my third.
And what were you doing in the past?
I was here to do a tour because I was Miss Uganda, so the Ugandan community in Los Angeles for the first time invited me here in California.
Yes.
And I did a tour. I saw Rodeo Drive, Walk of Fame.
Oh, did you? Oh, you've already been to the Walk of Fame. So
yeah,
we're planning to do that again.
Oh, I love being there. I've been there twice, and I'd love to go back the third time.
I know you love L.A.
Yeah, I love L.A.
Yeah, we went there yesterday. Tell me now, so you've been here now three times,
mm-hmm.
and you've been in Kampala, the capital of Uganda, hundreds of times.
Oh, yeah.
What do you see the most significant differences, you know, just obvious differences between Southern California and Kampala?
I'd say it's less crowded here, you know,
less
on
crowded.
The roads.
Yeah, except for traffic hours.
Except for traffic hours, yeah.
Yeah.
And also the roads are quite broad here compared to Uganda. You have about, what, 7 lanes, 4 lanes, more. We have like 2 lanes in Uganda.
2 lanes and a sidewalk.
And the sidewalk, yeah.
that you drive on.
Yeah, 3 maximum, really, but it's usually 2 lanes.
Yeah, yeah. I know that was the first thing that our country director, when he was here last year, Adrian Laurentu, and he said, I can't believe the size of the roads. This is, and then everybody really stays in the roads compared to Kampala.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like 3 roads, it's like 1 road, everybody fighting.
Exactly, yeah. But not on all roads, but on some roads when there are traffic hours, people want to get out of traffic, so they're just gonna try to, you know, even drive on the sidewalk, which is
Oh, I know. It's just amazing to get through Uganda. Is probably no more than 5 miles,
mm-hmm.
you know, to pass through, to go like to Jinja if you're going from one end to the other.
Yeah,
And it can take up to 2 hours.
It can.
To go.
The traffic is insane.
And I noticed also you guys said one of the differences in the highways is my driving. I drive so fast.
Oh, yeah. Charlie, you drive so fast. We don't drive that fast in Uganda.
Well, it's fun.
Yeah.
Leah, I'm interested in your background.
Mm-hmm.
You told me that in your early years, you experienced life in rural villages, so the poverty of rural villages.
Yeah.
What is life like in a village in Uganda where there is no clean water, no electricity, no toilets, you're living on dirt floors? Tell me about that.
I mean, when you grow up in a village like that, that is all you know. You don't know better. you get up in the morning, you know, as a child, probably go to fetch water. If you have a, if you have an opportunity to go to school, you go to school after, you know, doing the house chores and fetching water and all that. And also, you know, we use pit latrines. There are no toilets in the villages. So it's not good, but it's pretty much what you know. So you don't know what to compare. You don't know what to compare it to, you know.
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. You don't know what to compare it to. So people are, you know, it's not the best situation for anybody to live in for the rest of their lives. But then as you grow up, you start seeing better and you think, okay, I need to have better than what I have. And you see newspapers, you see the city, and you say, I need to live like this.
So is that true for most youths in Uganda, that they see that there is a better life possible, and so it's,
yes,
it's hard?
Yes, yes, for most youth. And some of them, you know, if you've been to Kampala, right?
Yes.
So you've seen the children begging on the street.
Yes.
So they just get on buses. And they, I don't know how they afford a bus ticket, but they get on a bus and they come to just beg on the street because they want to get out of the villages and out of that life. You know, it's dangerous on the street in Kampala as well, but then they prefer that compared to being in the village where there's no water and, you know, where you have to work for, you know, toil for everything, you know. Probably even the shelter is there's no proper shelter, the roof is leaking. It's bad. Yeah,
yes.
The villages, it's bad.
And I understand with the children in the streets, there are, it's not cartels, but it's individuals that will gather children.
Yeah.
And then have them collect money, and then the children have to go back and give
that money.
And give the money to these individuals, and they don't get to keep very much of it.
Yeah, but they do that because they know there's going to be shelter, there's going to be at least food, there's going to be some water. You know, and with the hope that probably someone is going to take pity on me and they'll adopt me, maybe. So it's...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It is so, so difficult. And what was interesting is that I was told that it's not legal to do that, but the people that are fined by the police are the people that give the money to the kids. It's not, they don't find the kids for asking for money.
No, they don't find the kids for asking for money.
They find the people who give the money.
Oh, I mean, I don't know that yet, because I mean, when I'm driving in Kampala, I can give some money to, you know, the person who comes to beg for some on my car window.
Yeah.
And I've never been fined for that.
Yeah, Adrian, that's what Adrian, our country director, told me.
Oh, maybe he fessed something like that.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So you spoke earlier, and with Wells of Life, we talk a lot about fetching water, that you fetched water yourself.
Yeah, I did. I did. You know, we've had this conversation before, but I can say it here again. My parents are teachers. Yeah.
Yes.
But when we'd have holidays, and there are no teachers in the big city, there are teachers in the, you know, in what you call up country.
Right. Right. Yeah. So they're not in the rural village exclusively. It's in a smaller city.
It's not even a city. It's like a smaller town.
Yes. It's just a road with a bunch of buildings on it.
Exactly. So during the holidays, you know, when school breaks. Because they're secondary school teachers, so there's going to be a holiday when school breaks. We'd go to the village.
But, for how long?
I mean, for like a month or more.
Okay.
You know? But this is every 3 months you break off, you know, from school.
Okay.
But when we go back home in the village, it's the same setting. There's no electricity, no water, no like direct water. Maybe rainwater sometimes because it rains.
Right.
Thankfully. And... you know, there's a pit latrine, just like the setting that, you know, you talked about.
But you were actually fetching water, so you were carrying...
Yeah, we'd carry like 20-liter jerrycans. I mean, I was like, what, 13?
20 liters?
Yeah, I could carry 20 liters. I mean, because that's what you know, that's what you see everyone doing,
so
you
do it. Well, that's right, because that's right. It's
and it saves time.
4 gallons or 5 mm-hmm. gallons.
So you don't want to go back and forth, and you're like, you know, let me just do...
And they weigh, you know, for us, 40 pounds. I don't know how many kilos that is, but
it's quite heavy. Yeah.
It's quite heavy. And how far do you travel?
I mean, like 1.5 kilometers, because to get to the river you'd have to, and it's not a straight path. It's like a hill. Go down the hill.
Oh,
there's
a
forest.
I've seen it.
Yeah, you've seen it?
It's terrible. It's terrible. I can't walk it. I can't walk it without carrying anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so amazed. And the children who live in the villages, so they miss part of school because they have to fetch water.
Yes.
Because it's mostly children, young girls.
And women. Yeah,
and women that are doing the water fetching.
Yeah, because the men have to probably graze the cattle, split the firewood that is going to be used to cook the food. Because we cook on an open fire. We don't have ovens or...
Yes, yeah. I know. I've seen that. It's just it is just sticks and a pot.
Yeah.
And a pot on top of that. And that's right in the middle of the house, right in the middle of the... Or is that outside the house?
It could be outside, or they just build like a shack with like some iron sheets, you know, or with temporary housing for that. There's mud... But dried mud.
Right, dried mud housing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, on some kind of wire base or something like
that. Yeah, something like
that. Yes. Yes.
Which could be washed away if there's a heavy rain.
Oh, really?
Heavy storm, it can just wash away. So, yeah, but then that's the lifestyle there. It's not good. That's what people have. That's what they try to work with.
Yeah, that's why, you know, when we, with Wells of Life, when we... are fortunate to be able to drill a water in a village.
Mm.
The happiness and the joy in the people is just...
They give... You know, I've been there with Adrian, and they just give gifts. They give chicken. They give, you know, a bunch of matoke, bananas. We call it matoke.
Yeah, matoke.
Yeah, bananas. They're just very, very happy because... And they say that's the best they can give, you know? But it's... From their heart, they're very grateful.
It is so interesting for us when we travel there, and they give us a gift, and we know how meaningful this gift is.
Mm-hmm.
They give us a chicken,
mm-hmm.
but then as Americans going back to a hotel, what are we going to do with the chicken?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't give it back to them because that's insulting.
Yeah, that's insulting.
And we don't want to insult them, so there's always that, you know, we receive just a wonderful gift.
Yeah.
We're saying, but what do we do with this gift? So you know from personal experience what it's like for these rural Ugandans.
Yes, I do.
How difficult it is. So did your life in villages have anything to do with your, because you have such a passion for service and philanthropy, did the villages, that life in a village impact your desire for service and philanthropy?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. When I got a chance at having a better life, you know, I thought, how can I give back? Because when you grow up, at first you think it's normal, and then, like I said previously, and then until you see better, and you say, okay, if I get this, maybe I can find a way to help someone who lived like me or who is living like me right now to get a chance at the life that I have. So that's what sparked everything. And, of course, participating in Miss Uganda and working with charities and just seeing lifestyles that were even worse than the lifestyle that I grew up in, all that sparked my love for philanthropy. So, yeah.
Yeah, I so admire you that you know you have a job as a model, and you could leave Uganda and just live in the United States and
mm-hmm.
figure out a lifestyle here and forget that, but you go back to serve and to help your friends and your people, and I find that so admirable. Not a lot of people do that. They find success and say, man, I'm out of here, and you say, no, I'm back in the middle of it, seeing what I can do to help it.
Yeah.
Leah, I think that's so impressive.
Thank you, Charlie.
Now, my intent for our time together is to spend a lot of time on your service desires, but I can't help but first let's talk about your path to becoming Miss Uganda. I mean, not everybody gets to be Miss Uganda. Only one woman.
Only one woman
gets to be Ugandan Miss Uganda. So, as a young girl, did you participate in beauty pageants, and that was a goal in your life to be Miss Uganda?
Not at all. Not at all. We don't have beauty. I mean, now they're there, but when I was growing up, there were no beauty pageants, and I'd never been to Kampala till I was almost 18 years old.
So you'd never been to the big city till almost 18?
No, I'd never been. I used to see it on TV and in newspapers.
No kidding. So you really were out there in what we call the boonies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's amazing because here in the United States, you know, to win a beauty pageant, they start at 7 or 8 years old mm-hmm. with parents that are, you know, taking them to all sorts of pageants and who knows how many face jobs they've had.
I've seen that on YouTube, but you know, because the people who hold the pageants back in Uganda, they know that not everyone has been fortunate to grow up rich to afford all that you're talking about. You know, the training for beauty pageants and whatnot. So they give an opportunity to everybody to participate. And
so how much training was involved to become the process of becoming Miss Uganda?
Minus the application process, because you would apply, fill in the form, and then from the form, there were like 5,000 forms. Then out of the 5,000, they choose about 200. Then they meet the 200. From the 200, they choose the 21. And then for 3 weeks, they're teaching them how to, you know, remain poised, how to speak in public, how to, you know.
Oh, really?
How to become ladies.
Is it a good education?
It is a good education for 3 weeks. I think every lady should go through that. My friends at university had gone through it. That's the one thing that made me want to participate in Miss Uganda, because I saw them change. You know, but like,
how did they change?
I mean, they were more poised, the way they talked, because their English was more polished. So I said, you know what, this is something I want, and it's just 3 weeks. If I win, wonderful. If I don't win, it's still a win-win.
Absolutely. Because I was going to ask, what made you want to pursue this opportunity, and that's the.
That's the reason. That's the reason. I wanted to be more poised and, you know, to speak better, of course, and to also build my network, because you're exposed to different people, and it was one of the things, yeah? One of the things that I could do to get that.
That shows your desire for improvement, because I know you have a desire to do better, get better,
yeah.
and perform better. I want to spend time in talking about your philanthropy and your service, but before we do, we're going to take a brief break.
All right, Charlie.
You're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and this is Charlie Hedges, and today is a special day as we are visiting with Leah Kagasa, who is Miss Uganda 2016. And, you know, it's interesting talking to her about the process of becoming Miss Uganda, but we're really here because Leah is very interested in service and philanthropy and not gaining wealth and popularity in order to leave Uganda and live a better lifestyle somewhere, but she wants to go back to Uganda and help people. So one thing about becoming Miss Uganda is it opened doors for you
yeah.
that you wouldn't have had before. Tell me about that. What kinds of doors did that open for you? What kind of opportunities did that give you?
I traveled a bit more. I'd never been outside Uganda on an airplane until after Miss Uganda.
And how old were you then?
I was 21, I think.
21?
Yeah, 21 when I competed. So for the very first time, I was able to travel out of Uganda. And it also opened doors to participate in, the big pageant, Miss World, that I'd never thought I'd ever participate in because of my background, it opened me up to different people, my network grew, and also I started helping, I saw different, like that's through Miss Uganda, I met Wells of Life. If it wasn't for Miss Uganda, I would never have met Wells of Life.
Yeah, and we would have been the ones missing out.
Yeah, probably. it's both ways, and because I love giving, but give me a platform to be able, besides all this nice stuff and traveling, etc. It gave me a platform to express myself. It gave me a platform to give. Gave me a platform to be able to go to to schools and talk to young. What do you call it? Young adults, really, but they're not
adolescents.
Adolescents,
yes.
Yeah. Adolescents and teenagers. And, to share with them the things that I wish had been shared with me when I was that age. And to also raise funds and to raise awareness for different causes. And, so that's some of
the... But with the children, you have an impact because... now you're certainly a young adult. You're not an adolescent, but you're closer to their age than Charlie at 70 years old is, and so they can relate to you so much more. Isn't that true?
Yeah, they can, and that's why I do it, because I know that if someone much older would talk to them, they'd say, okay, this one looks like our teacher, this one looks like our headmistress. But if I go and talk to them, they say, okay, she's been there. And she overcame the things that we are trying to overcome, and she reached her dreams, and she's still dreaming more. So, I can do exactly what she did. So I encourage them to stay in school because education is important, And yeah, Charlie.
That's really wonderful. And one of the things that strikes me as we were talking, that this opportunity as Miss Uganda has given you an opportunity as a woman to do this rather than men, all the men in the politics and the women. Tell me, it just leads me to wonder about the expanding roles for women in Uganda. Are there any women in power in Uganda?
Yeah, we have some, but they're not... Okay, we have the Speaker of Parliament. She's I think, the most powerful woman in the country right now, the Speaker of Parliament. And, of course, the First Lady, because she's the First Lady. But the Speaker of Parliament is the most important woman in the country. And we're so glad that they met, that it's a woman that they chose to be a Speaker of Parliament. It's not 50-50, there's no equality, but it's starting to get there because now people are speaking up about gender equality and
where are they speaking? Is it in the schools or is it just in the politics?
Both.
Both?
Yeah, both.
That's
both
great. So
politics.
Gender equality really is an issue that's talked about in Uganda.
Yes, it is. It is. We're starting to, before the men were not comfortable with it because of their egos and, as an African society, the men are always on top. But with the changing world and people getting exposed, the conversation has been sparked and now people talk about it and people are starting to open up, though it's not yet at 50-50. It's not yet at where there's 50% male, 50% female. The males still have a higher percentage in roles of leadership and everywhere from the private sector to the governments to schools. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's even the lack of equality is even the lower down you go on the scale, like in the rural villages, the men have absolute total control.
Yeah, they do. And because they're the head. They're the head of the family.
They take any money that's made. That all goes to them.
Yes, yes. Because the women there are not exposed to know their rights. Some women don't even know their rights. So the men are very dominant in the villages.
That's why when we go and we establish a well, one of the things we do when we drill a well is that we create what's called a water user committee, and it has 11 individuals on the water user committee, and we require a minimum of 40% women, and we're looking for 60% women, more women than men.
More women than men. That's good.
Because the women are the ones that are fetching the water.
Yeah.
So why should a man be telling them how to do this and what to do on it? This is their job. Let them control it.
That's why I love Wells of Life.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. But that is really important, and I find that very interesting that gender equality in developing world is growing, not just in the developed world, but in the developing world, the gender equality is becoming important.
It is, because now they're seeing the role of a woman, because the woman is important.
Oh my goodness, are you kidding?
Yeah.
There are, you know, several of my favorite leaders in the United States are women.
See?
Yeah. My wife and I are very strong in this. This is very important to us. Mm. Now, also, I was just curious about the women's concerns in Uganda. I know you are very active in service roles for children, adolescents, and young girls. Mm. What kinds of things do you do to assist these children? What do you do, and what impacts do you make doing that?
What do you mean?
What kind of in schools? You know, you're teaching like in schools. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, when we go to schools, we teach adolescents about sexual reproductive health, because that's the body changes a lot. You know, in the teenage,
in that crazy adolescent years where they're
And then, you know, we just teach them, because we know that they're dealing with different things. The body's changing. Their emotions are all over the place. So we just teach them how to handle that. It's not just me. I go with a team, of course. I'm not the only one who goes to the schools. I work with a team. But, you know, we teach them that. Then, you know, we also tell them that it's normal to go through it. It's not an abnormal thing. But then, you know, that's why there are senior teachers, senior women teachers or senior men teachers in schools. So we also meet with the teachers. It's not just the students that we meet with. We meet with the teachers as well, and we tell them that, you know, do not treat these kids harshly, you know?
Right.
Don't treat them harshly, but just lead them, because I'm not going to be at the school every day, but the senior teachers are there every day, so, yeah.
One of the issues that has come up in our WASH program, which is water sanitation and hygiene, so we deal a lot with sanitation and hygiene, and one of the issues I think we weren't anticipating, but that has really become an issue, is menstrual hygiene.
Yep.
And that the thing that really troubles me as a man is that the boys make fun of the girls.
Yeah, it's
horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Because the girls have no control over it.
Yeah, and we saw a video yesterday where they're throwing stones at girls.
Yeah,
and.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, in mockery and laughing. And so the education there, it's two different kinds of education. It's education of the girls of how to do menstrual hygiene safer and
and also teach the boys.
And how to teach the boys.
That it's a normal thing for the girls to be going through and that they should support.
How do the boys take that, Leah? Do they listen?
You know, yes, they do listen, because we go with a male as well to teach when we're going to the school. Because we know that they're going to listen to that male. You know, we have to find a way to communicate better. So we know that the male is going to communicate and tell them that, you know, imagine it's your mother that, you know, they were laughing at 20, 40 years ago. How would you feel? So then, you know, we get into their emotions and we show them that it's important that that the girls in school are supported. And we believe that there is an impact, because I've had people, you know, I've had people who have met me in Kampala, these young girls who have met me, and they said, you know what, when you came to our school, you told us ABC, and we've followed it. Thank you so much. You're my role model. And they don't remember their faces, but they remember me. And they remember exactly what, most importantly, they remember what I told them.
So. Yes, and you have to be such a symbol of hope.
Yeah,
that you know you can come out of this, and there is hope if you're able to study and work hard and
make it
your goal.
Absolutely.
to improve yourself. I was just thinking of a very important question, and it lost my mind here. I'm always losing my mind. That it had to do with the boys. Oh, that we saw yesterday, you and I watched a video from Bangladesh.
Yep.
And a young girl was so embarrassed because the latrines and the toilets are so bad at the school. And we always encourage, when we're building latrines at schools, to have a boys' section and
a girls' section.
And many of them don't.
Yeah.
They have that. And so the girl would walk a mile home to go to the
bathroom
and then walk a mile back during school. So she's missing out on an hour at least of school.
Or more. Because you don't know, it's not a straight road. Yeah, there are corners.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's hills.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so hard for us to understand, in the United States, when we have...
Yeah, everything.
Not only
infrastructure.
Toilets. Yeah.
Well, you just imagine not having that. That's the best thing I can tell you. Like, just imagine not having that. Imagine having to, go through... probably the woods. Here you have forests, what you call the woods, right?
Yes.
Imagine having to go through the woods to find the road, to go to school, and not having a road, a straight road that is going to lead to school.
Right, just a path in the bush.
And the bush, and boys being there and just laughing at you or teasing you
and not feeling safe.
Yeah, some of them do, and not feeling safe. But if there was, if there was a proper toilet at school, if there was water flowing, students wouldn't have this. You know what I mean?
Yes, I understand exactly what you mean. And part of the problem, as I see it, is lack of leadership by fathers. The fathers are not telling the boys that this is inappropriate behavior and I don't accept this. But they come from an older generation, so it's going to
take
them.
And they were also not taught, so they think, he'll just figure it out, or the girls will adjust like they've always adjusted. So, but it's going to change. There's hope, Charlie. There's hope. It's not all bad.
Yes, there is hope. Tell me, as we're nearing our time here. Mm. Why did you choose Wells of Life as a charity that you might enjoy working with or feel that you could do some good with?
The solution that Wells of Life brings or provides, it's one of the human basic needs, the most important human basic need, which is water, and it is a human right. And it is ignored in my country, because... people think it's the way of life. People should, women should have to do this. They should have to go long distances because it's been like that for generations.
Yeah, and it's hundreds of years.
Hundreds of years, and it's ignored, but they don't see the people. When it's ignored, they don't see that there is time that is spent that could be used to be for the women to be more productive,
Right.
And to cut that poverty cycle because
yes.
Water cuts deep.
And the children in school.
And the children in school. And the safety of the people at home. And the diseases like, cholera, diarrhea, dysentery, all those water-related diseases.
Yes.
And they think it's normal. They'll be fine. Probably they'll use traditional medication, but that doesn't work. And it's just, it keeps people in that poverty cycle, not having clean water.
Yes.
So when I heard about Wells of Life and what you do for the villages and that you don't only provide a well, but you teach people sanitation and hygiene. through the WASH program. And it touched me a lot because I remember exactly how I grew up. I remember my village, how it looked like. I remembered going to those, you know, walking long distances to look for clean water from the river. I don't know if it was actually clean, but we brought it back at home and boiled it,
yes.
You know, to make it clean. So I thought, this is an organization I'd like to represent because it, you know, I'm emotionally attached to Wells of Life. It's not just because of the work that you do. I'm really emotionally attached to Wells of Life.
That is so gracious of you. We are so proud and honored to have you with us.
Thank you, Charlie.
That you do all that what you do.
Mm.
I have one final question, Leah, as we come to our end, and this is on a completely different topic, but it's something that's curious to me.
Okay, ask me.
And that is, does it ever frustrate you personally that people may focus on your beauty and ignore your intelligence and your heart for helping the poorest of the poor? Is that a frustrating thing to you?
Yes, Charlie, it is frustrating. You know, when people back in my country, when they see a woman, the first thing they're going to look at is her looks. What does she look like? Before they even hear her out. So it's not all of the people, but some of them, or even a biggest,
the majority, yes.
Yeah. And it's not a fun thing to go through, to be honest. So it's until you talk and they say, oh, okay, what is she going to say? You know, but for platforms like Miss Uganda, we've changed that.
Yes.
We've changed that. We've shown that it's not just a beautiful face, but it's someone who is going to stand up to people and talk to them and, you know, stand up to all those the negativity that is going on in the society. And to be a lady of substance and someone that people can look up to. So it's changing, but the process is not fun.
Well, it's just, you know, the first time we met, I was struck by your intelligence and your passion. It just...
Thank you.
I mean, your beauty is obvious.
Thank you.
And so you're very beautiful. But what really came through to me was that this is a very bright young woman, and a woman that really does care about people. And I think that's so important. Let me ask you. I keep saying final question. This really is, Paul, the final question. He's used to me. As we close our time together, and we talk about changing, about the changes you desire for the poorest of the poor, often referred to as the bottom billion.
Mm.
If you had the chance, if you had the power to help people in your rural Uganda, what do you think you would focus on first?
Water.
Water?
Water, Charlie. That's the most important thing.
Do you know, we've done research on the poverty cycle, the first element of the poverty cycle
is lack of clean, sustainable water.
Clean, sustainable, safe water.
Sustainable, safe water, yes.
That's great. Oh, my goodness. So how can people get in touch with you, Leah?
I have an email address. I'm yet to put up my website, but my email address is Leah Kagasa.
K-A-G-A.
Okay, L-E-A-H. Kagasa at gmail.com.
And I'll put that in the show notes so people will be able to read it in the show notes.
All right.
So I'll be able to get that. So, Leah Kagasa, Miss Uganda, my friend, thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me, Charlie.
It's my pleasure. And I also want to thank all our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie. And please be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.
Bye for now.